Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday. It's March 31st, currently 35 degrees and mostly cloudy here in Old Town Park City. We've got 40 degrees in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Happy Monday. We've got us a wild forecast. We'll call it weather whiplash here over the next couple of days. So I know April the 1st, April Fool's Day is coming up, but this is no April Fool's forecast. We've got spring-like conditions again for us today, but that's going to quickly change into winter-like conditions for us tonight. So let's break it all down for you here. As we go throughout the day, we'll have a chance of a spotty shower or two as we get into the early afternoon hours, but a decent chance of showers and even rumbles of thunder as you get towards the Heber Valley as we go into this afternoon. That's going to be along the cold front that's going to move through, and it's going to be a strong cold front here as that front makes its way probably through the Heber Valley around 3 to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Ahead of it, we'll see those temperatures in the Heber Valley climbing into the mid-50s. Meanwhile, in Park City, we'll see those highs climbing into the upper 40s, and I think we'll just basically see a little rain-snow mix that will quickly change over to all snow as we go into the afternoon and even hours in Park City. So if you're in Park City, plan on the potential of a round of heavy snow as we get towards, let's say, after 5 o'clock and going all the way through about midnight. That snow will come down potentially at some rates of a half an inch to an inch an hour. So it's going to be kind of interesting as we go into the evening hours for any time you're commuting around the Park City area. For the Heber Valley, that rain will switch over to snow shower activity as we go into the late evening hours, probably after about 9 o'clock or so. And that will be all snow for the rest of the night heading into your Tuesday morning. As we go throughout your Tuesday, we start the day with temperatures into the mid to upper 20s in the Heber Valley, and we'll be down into the low to mid 20s in Park City with that snow chance continuing, and we'll have off and on periods of snow going throughout the day on Tuesday, and some of that will also likely accumulate in some spots. So we've got a round of accumulating snow heading our way as we go towards tonight through your Tuesday, and then we can see one more little wave of energy move through Tuesday night into Wednesday morning, and that could bring another little round of snow for the area as we go into your Tuesday night into your Wednesday morning commute before we finally see things starting to at least taper off a little bit for the end of the week, but still a chance of off and on snow showers continuing all the way through about Thursday, if not Friday of this week. As far as temperatures go, as I mentioned, we'll be down in the 20s by tomorrow morning. We'll be climbing to around freezing in Park City. That's about it, with high temperatures right around 40 in the Heber Valley for us as we go throughout our Tuesday afternoon. On Wednesday, we start down with temperatures into the teens in both Park City and the Heber Valley, with high temperatures only in the 30s in Park City and only in the low 40s in the Heber Valley. And then we start to try to warm it up a little bit, and I do mean a little bit, as we go into the end of the week. Thursday, we're still starting off in the teens with highs in the 30s and 40s, and we'll be back near 50 in the Heber Valley by Friday with low 40s for Park City. So, Leslie, yeah, we've got some more changes heading our way, and some folks may think it's an April Fool's joke, but it's really not. You'll notice the big changes by tonight.
Okay, thanks so much, Cedric.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:09. Well, stay tuned. Coming up, well, we're hoping to have a report from the Utah Avalanche Center. I haven't seen Dave call in yet. But stay tuned. Coming up for the local news hour, I'll be checking in with the co-lead of the Wasatch-backed Citizens Climate Lobby, Tracy Harden, with an update on that group's activities. Park City Recreation Program Supervisor Megan Levin with details on the opening of summer camp registration tomorrow, and that goes to the general public, as well as some of the spring programming. And the Executive Director of Wasatch Trails Foundation, Mia Ewan, to discuss the problem of electric motorcycles on the Coyote Trails, as well as some of their planned upcoming trails projects. All right, and still no word from the Utah Avalanche Center, but their report online says that it is a low avalanche danger to start today. That danger, though, rising to moderate with new snowfall and increased wind speeds this afternoon, when it would be possible for humans to trigger some small soft slab avalanches made up of that new or wind-drifted snow. So keep an eye out for those changing conditions and avoid any steep slope that could have shallow drifts of new or wind-blown snow. And stay tuned to KPCW coming up right after the local news hour for Mountain Money. Today's guests include Mark Dunkelman, author of the book Why Nothing Works, Who Killed Progress and How to Bring It Back, a look at how, in the author's view, America finds it so difficult to do big things. Then a conversation with Eileen Mullay at RE, a new store featuring used handbags and more, now open on Iron Horse Drive. And finally, a conversation with Stephanie Padilla, owner of Savannah's Unique Boutique at Junction Commons. All of that coming up on Mountain Money, of course, heard every Monday from 9 to 10. Well, as development in and around Deer Valley East Village progresses, Wasatch County leaders say they want to think strategically about how to incorporate the new growth into the county. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports.
At the Wasatch County Council's strategic retreat Tuesday, leaders described growth in East Village and around the Jordanelle Reservoir as the elephant in the room.
From transportation and from the branding side and from housing, you know, are they our enemy? Are they our partner? Are they our brother?
That's Councilmember Mark Nelson. He said change is happening fast at the northern end of the county, and he wants Wasatch County and the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce to have a plan to handle the growth.
They're part of Park City from a branding point of view. And from an economic development point of view, they will, if we believe the forecast, eclipse everything else that we're going to do down here in the valley. It'll be the monster.
He pointed to the new hotels being constructed in East Village, which have the 84060 Park City zip code and advertise as Park City destinations. The growth in East Village is largely connected to the Military Installation Development Authority, or MIDA. MIDA is a state agency governed by appointed, not elected officials. It was originally founded to benefit military service members. In Wasatch County, MIDA is overseeing the development of thousands of new homes and hotel rooms. That includes the Grand Hyatt Deer Valley, a 400-room hotel with 100 rooms set aside for qualifying veterans and military members. MIDA keeps the bulk of new property tax revenue for 40 years to reinvest into its developments in the county, while Wasatch County taxing entities get 25%. County Manager Dustin Graybaugh said development is only accelerating in East Village. He sits on the Development Review Committee, the board that approves plans for MIDA construction in Wasatch County.
So this last week, we approved the fourth hotel that will begin construction this year as the MIDA DRC. It's going to be a big change for this area. And while it's been planned for a long time, it's actually coming to fruition.
This winter was the first during which skiers could access Deer Valley's expanded terrain, and the Grand Hyatt opened in November. By the time the resort expansion is complete, Deer Valley will have more than doubled its skiable terrain. Nelson said he's not necessarily opposed to MIDA developments using Park City branding.
Perhaps from a strategic point of view, the Jordanelle Basin is our cash cow, and we're happy to say it's Park City. As long as the checks keep coming to Wasatch County, hallelujah.
But Councilmember Eric Rowland said he wants to ensure the county isn't overshadowed by developments in East Village and the rest of the Jordanelle area.
Unless we as a community come together and try and really define what Wasatch is, we will become nothing more than a grocery store and support staff for that hotel.
And Councilmember Luke Searle said the council shouldn't forget there are year-round residents in the Jordanelle Basin, too. He said leaders could also do more to educate locals about what's going on at the northern end of the county.
Something that we could do this year is creating a tab on our website for the MIDA area that has Richard's information, has the development there, because there's confusion. People have no clue what's going on up there. And MIDA doesn't seem like super interested or excited about telling it.
He's referring to Richard Breitenbecker, a county employee who liaises between MIDA and Wasatch County. Council members said they also want to consider revamping signature events in the Heber Valley to ensure the county's brand stays true to the community's rural roots.
The biggest, baddest, best, newest five-star resort in the whole country is in Wasatch County. And we also have the Demolition Derby and the Wasatch County Fair and Swiss Days, which are the coolest things in the whole world. And we have, man, talk about the two ends of the spectrum.
The council's conversation comes amid larger plans to revise Wasatch County's general plan, the guiding document for future growth and economic development. To learn more about the project, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the local chapter of the Citizens Climate Lobby met this past weekend, and in the studio with an update, I have the co-leader of the Wasatch Back chapter, Tracy Harden. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, Leslie.
Start by telling us what the Citizens Climate Lobby is and what it is that you do.
Sure. Well, the Citizens Climate Lobby is a national organization, and we focus on nonpartisan grassroots climate advocacy with our members of Congress.
Okay, and there's lots of chapters around the country.
All over the country, there are chapters, and throughout Utah, we have chapters in the Wasatch Back, Wasatch Front, up in Logan, down in St. George.
Now, does the Wasatch Back chapter focus on anything in particular, or just try to bring the national conversation locally?
Well, both. So we're very active on the national level. So our national objective is that twice a year, we in Utah meet with our four members of Congress, so our two senators and four representatives. So that's at the core of it. And when we do that, we're focused on usually four different areas for the year. For example, right now we're trying to help preserve IRA funding. And then we also bring it to the local level, which you've probably familiar with. We've done candidate panels with our local candidates for government to talk about climate policy, transportation, housing, everything that rolls into that. And then we do other educational outreach and events. So, for example, we'll be participating in Parksley's Earth Day to talk about building electrification. So both on a national, regional, and local level, we have activities going.
Okay. So how can people get involved if they're interested?
It's very easy. If you go to citizensclimatelobby.org, there is a green button in the upper right-hand corner that says join, and you find your local chapters. It's free to join. You'll sign up, and then within a couple days, you will get an email from one of us in the local Wasatch chapter inviting you to our upcoming activities.
Okay, and do you meet monthly?
We do, usually the third Saturday of every month.
All right, so you just met on Saturday, as I mentioned. This month's discussion topic was how to communicate with people who aren't like us. So talk about some of the techniques that members discussed.
Sure, you know, I think a lot of us are finding our conversations very polarized and having a difficult time getting engaged in meaningful conversation, whether it's in politics or within climate change. So what we were practicing at the meeting yesterday was how to have better, more productive conversations. And so here's the rules of the road with it. The first thing you try to do is find common ground. For example, we all really want a healthier planet to protect it for future generations. Another rule of the road is to use storytelling over statistics, because statistics really don't move people. So when you're talking about the impact of climate, maybe we talk about a farmer who's struggling and what's happening with the drought and how that's impacting him and then what we can do. The other thing is to ask questions, don't tell. So maybe opening it up and saying, well, Leslie, what concerns you most about clean energy policies? And draw them out on that. That's another helpful tip. And then avoid judgment language, like, you know, people saying people don't care about the environment. Instead of saying that, you can turn it around and said, you know, I've met many people who worry about the climate crisis and our policies. What are your thoughts? So you shift from this judgment and facts into collaboration. And the other key thing is to say that you always want to acknowledge their perspective. And I think this is something key in a lot of our conversations right now politically. People just want to be heard. We might be in opposing viewpoints on this, but Leslie, I want you to understand why I'm so passionate about this. So at least you can feel like you've left the conversation that they've been heard, and you've given them some food for thought, and you don't have to win the argument.
Yeah, those are good tips for any conversation, right?
Yeah, right.
Let's see. Is it more difficult, do you think, to discuss climate change today, just given the current administration?
Yeah. You know, I would say in my 3 years being involved with Citizen Climate Lobby and conversations, we were making a lot of progress. You know, just learning how to engage the more conservative and Republicans on it. With the Trump administration, I think a lot of Republicans are reticent to engage in these conversations. Mm-hmm. Just like ESG and DEI have been shut down, they want to avoid it. Talking about climate, they're not going to be too outspoken in public about the conversation right now. Although there are plenty of Republicans that are on board with climate change policy and trying to preserve the IRA funding.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about that, because that's an issue I know that you're working on with a national organization to ask that they keep this IRA tax credit funding. What is it, and why is it important to maintain?
Well, the IRA was passed, back in 2022, 2021, and it has, billions of dollars in it to help with advancing, climate and clean energy. So, for example, if you look in Utah, there's a lot of money going towards battery storage. There's a lot on solar. There's a lot in research and advancement in it. There's our, bringing it home. Solar, we have a 30% tax credit for rooftop solar. There's a $7,500 tax credit if you want to put in heat pump, heating, air conditioning system. So at a very broader infrastructure level, there's billions of dollars, and then also bringing it home to us. There's lots of funding in it.
Yeah, so this is that Infrastructure Reinvestment Act, again, as you mentioned, that was passed back 2021. So is there a threat, though, to losing that?
Yes. So right now that Congress is meeting on it, and they're doing their budget, and they'll be doing their reconciliation, we're lobbying right now very hard, and not just people in the environmental side. There's a lot of ironically, a lot of red states are benefiting most from this IRA funding. And so the idea of clawing that back now and stopping it, it's a huge economic hit for them. So that this is a lobby effort to keep it. We desperately need to keep this funding. So, as we all know, they're trying to cut our spending. So there's probably going to be cuts to it, but we're hoping that we'll preserve a large part of the IRA.
Okay. And then what are you hearing from our congressional representatives?
Well, there's 21 members of the Republican Climate Caucus at the House level that have written a letter to Speaker Mike Johnson saying this is really critical that we preserve this funding for the sake, and all those reasons I just mentioned. So on the Utah state level, John Curtis, as our senator, was one of the founders of that climate caucus. He's now in the Senate. I absolutely have faith that John Curtis can help move the needle and keep IRA funding. I think, we have advocates with, I think Blake Moores is behind it. And then in our work also with Celeste Malloy, Burgess Owens, and Mike Kennedy, I don't find any of our conversations with people saying, I don't want to protect the environment or the climate. It's just that they have to navigate the political system for it. So in Utah, do I find hardline opposition to it? Not really.
Oh. All right. So stay tuned.
Right.
Okay. An Earth Day celebration is being planned at Park City Library. Do you have details on this?
On Saturday, April 26th, which is not Earth Day, it's the Saturday of Earth Week, the Park City Library will be hosting about a two-hour event, which will feature speakers. We'll have about a 15-minute session on that, and our focus on that is on building electrification. So I will be bringing in people in Park City residents that have successfully done some modification, either built a new home or done modification on their home to help electrify it.
Okay, so are we also talking about the need for, we've heard that we are in deficit of, we need four times more electric power in the state of Utah than we actually have resources for. So is that part of this?
No, the building electrification is really bringing it home to help people understand where we should be looking at for electrifying our homes. And this is a long transition process. So for example, if you are in a 30-year-old home and you probably know that your furnace is going to be going out soon, There's tax credits for a heat pump, which in heat pump, just so you know, is an electric device that replaces your furnace, and it also acts as an air conditioner. Okay, and they can be a little bit more expensive, but overall they're much more efficient, so your energy cost goes down. And there is powered by electricity, not natural gas. But when your furnace goes out, it is not the time to say, what do I do next? How do I install this? So we researching it now, knowing, having these companies that will help people, connect people to, that will help a homeowner navigate what it's going to be like, what would be the options for your home to convert it over when your gas furnace goes out. We're helping to empower them with those resources.
Okay, and then you're actually hoping to expand that by having some kind of electrification fair?
Right. So we're starting an electrification coalition. It's called Go Electric Utah, which will do exactly that. The goal is to bring the resources. So it's the subject matter expertise, it's the contractors, the builders together to help educate people about what their options are. You know, let's just say another thing is to take out your gas stove because of the pollutants going in. So the option there is to do a really good option is to do an induction cook stove. Well, how much are they? And what is the difference in how I cook? Having the people supplying induction cook stoves would be at the electric fair. We might even have people with electric vehicles there. But it's a very big education fair to say, what's the next wave in your home when you modify it to go electric and get off natural gas?
Okay. So this is something just in the planning stages. You don't have a date or time or anything like that?
Not yet, but we will certainly be publicizing when we have it together.
Okay. And also you hope to put together a nuclear energy panel. Why do this?
So nuclear energy is actually a form of clean energy. And through, you know, just my participation in a couple of national nuclear energy conferences this past year, what the nuclear energy consortium is very far ahead and bullish on nuclear. And my caution to them is they're out on a science and political runway with this. I don't think the public is necessarily ready to say yay nuclear, because we still have in our mind the nuclear disasters of the past. So the idea is to bring in the experts from Idaho National Lab, maybe the Department of Energy, to do a panel so we can be more informed as citizens on what the new generation of nuclear is.
All right. Again, so does CCL have a position on nuclear energy?
Yes, we are pro-nuclear in the nuclear mix. So, you know, the concerns with it is it takes much longer to build and construct, and it's much more expensive, say, than developing a wind farm or solar farms. So let's hear about that from the industry. And there's other pros to nuclear, though. It's a much smaller footprint. It's an excellent form of baseload power when the wind's not blowing and the sun's not shining. And then there, you know, the new types of reactors, and there's several different kind, provide a lot of options in the energy mix. So let's figure out what that is so we have a better understanding of it.
Yeah, but do they all require uranium, plutonium to run?
They do have fuel needs, yes.
Right, which is just another issue. It's like, what do we do with that stuff?
But you know what, Leslie, those are great questions and objections that people have, concerns mm-hmm. on the mining of it and then also the waste. But when I'm at these conferences and those conversations come up, the amount of waste and then how it's handled now is a lot different than what it was 50 years ago. So nuclear has progressed tremendously, and that's one of the reasons why I think we need to have this public forum so that people can understand more about it.
Okay. Let's see. So many federal climate policies are being challenged today. How are you working as CCNL to kind of roll that back?
Well, I think, you know, the climate policies and what we're doing right now on, let's just say the cutbacks to NOAA. As soon as we understand that there is an issue or concern, we, you know, the call comes out from the national office that we need you to call your congressman and tell him to not do X, because, and then they give us the talking points, and you can go as deep as you want in the research to say it. So we do a lot. I think we handle it on a few ways. Once we know that there's an issue there, we are very strong in letter writing with letters to the editor. You see all the time in our newspapers. We are calling our congressmen, we're writing them, and then we're also meeting with them. So we are very active in this, and because we're right in Washington, D.C., we have our pulse on this.
Okay. Hey, anything else you want to mention? I know you've got, a next meeting in April then.
Well, we just did a combination meeting because of Easter's falling on our normal weekend. So Saturday, April 5th, the 15th of May, we will be meeting again. Anyone who's interested in learning more and joining us, please just go to citizensclimatelobby.org, and it's super easy to navigate, and you join. There's no commitment and there's no money. Just come and see.
Okay. Tracy, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
Tracy Harden, again, is the co-lead of the local chapter of the Citizens Climate Lobby. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:34. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. In the studio now with an update from Park City Recreation is Recreation Program Supervisor Megan Levin. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with the fact, though, that summer day camp registration is open to everyone starting tomorrow morning. What does that mean?
So actually, with summer day camp, we had a priority registration for 84060 residents on March 14th. So they had to submit paperwork already to us for that. But if you miss that deadline for 84060, you can register tomorrow, April 1st at 7 a.m. And we do have some spots left for full summer camper or daily spots. And then on April 3rd at 7 a.m., registration will open to everyone else.
Okay. So people do still have a chance to, if they're local.
Yes, for residents.
Park City taxpayers. Okay. So how fast does that fill up usually? I mean, will there be spots left over April 3rd, you think?
I don't know. I think they do fill up pretty fast. There is a wait list if you miss out on registration, and the wait list does move pretty fast. So if you email us and give us the days and times that you want to have your kid come to camp, then we can, depending on availability, add daily campers.
And then what does a camp day look like? It starts at when?
I believe, I'm not super familiar with, I run adventure camp, not summer day camp, but I believe it starts at 8 a.m. and then goes till 4 or so, or maybe a little bit later. So it's a full day.
Yeah.
And activities include like sports, games, arts and crafts, and then we also have add-on activities that opens for everyone tomorrow on April 1st. And that could be pickleball, tennis, golf, skateboarding, swimming, and we do provide transportation for that.
Okay, so what people can do is they can choose, can they get the whole summer or just specific weeks?
There are some full daily summer camper registration spots available.
Okay.
And then you can sign up daily. We don't do weekly registration, but you can select all the days that you would like.
Okay. So you had mentioned you've got adventure camp. What's that?
Yeah, so adventure camp runs Monday through Thursday, and it is a 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. program, and we do one-day adventures throughout Park City, or sometimes we go down to Provo, and we do rafting, we do zip lining, just really fun, adventurous, outdoorsy things, and transportation is provided with that, and it's 15 campers per week for 7 weeks, different campers for each week, so.
Okay, and that is like you say, an all-day deal and just changes pretty much week to week.
Yeah, week to week, and then on Fridays, we run Mountain Classroom in coordination with Adventure Camp, and this summer, if your child is signed up for Adventure Camp, you can add on Mountain Classroom for a discount, and it runs the same hours and same meeting place, and we go into the Uintas, and we learn about the environment, and then also go paddleboarding.
Fun. All right, and that's for what, an older group?
That is for a little bit older, for 9 to 14 year olds, yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned the add-ons, and that would be like that mountain classroom?
Not for that. Mm-hmm. For summer day camp, we have swimming lessons or tennis, pickleball, skateboarding, and golf lessons. So that's a little different. And they would go from summer day camp to those activities and then provide transportation back to summer day camp.
Okay, got it. Let's see. In terms of what people need to register, do they have to have some kind of proof that they are city residents?
In our Civic Rec registration portal, they should already have their information uploaded in there, and they just have their zip code listed. It is for best chance of getting the programs that you would like. You should make sure that you can log into your account on our website on the Civic Rec and then have all your family members added.
Okay. Do you offer any sort of scholarships?
We do. We have our sliding fee scale, and that does require you have to submit some paperwork for that with proof of your income, and you have to be approved for that, and then it'll be added to your account so you can get discounts based on that.
Okay. Let's take a look at some of the spring programming you've got coming up. First is this Wilderness First Aid class and certification course. Is this that Wilderness First Responder or maybe a step back?
A little bit of a step back. So we have our Wilderness First Aid classes, which is a two-hour program, and that's coming up on Tuesday, April 15th, and it's geared towards hikers and backcountry adventurers. And then we have our Wilderness First Aid certification course, which would be a step up from that. It's 16 hours, and it's on May 10th and 11th, a Saturday and Sunday. And participants, the successful ones, will receive a two-year certification from Solo.
Okay. And who do you have teaching that?
Courtney Llewellyn from Traverse Beyond. She has, I think, 16 years of experience teaching.
Okay. Let's see, what else you got going on? You got some street hockey clinics?
Yes. So in coordination with the Utah Hockey Club, we have two street hockey clinics coming up, one on April 24th for third to fourth graders, and then fifth and sixth graders. It's on the same day, just 2 hours of that. And it includes, it's $35, and it includes a T-shirt, a hockey stick, and then a ticket voucher to a Utah Hockey Club game.
All right, and they play with rollerblades?
No, actually, so you're running around in your sneakers and just regular clothing. There's no protective gear, and you just have a stick and a ball, and it's pretty fun.
Okay, and I know this babysitting certification course is always popular. You got that coming up?
Yes, we have that coming up, I believe, on May 20th, and that is certification through us and First Aid. Our First Aid class is different than that, but babysitting, you'll learn a bunch of different things for sitting kids around Park City area.
All right. And then an upcoming soccer league. This is a 7-7. Is it indoor?
It's outdoors, mm-hmm. And it'll start in the spring, April 17th. And we're doing a little bit different this year for the spring. It's in a social soccer league for adults. So you sign up individually and rank your skill level on our registration, and then we'll put teams together. And it's supposed to be more an emphasis on fun and meeting new people.
Okay, and then where does that happen?
That happens out at Quinn's on the turf.
All right, is it a smaller field?
I think it is a little bit shortened. We play like kind of the side way of the Quinn's field. And it is 7-7, so yeah, there is a lot of running involved.
Okay. You're also looking for referees?
We are. We're looking for an official for that. And then also for our Spring Youth Soccer League, which starts on April 23rd. Our registration is full for that, but if your child is signed up to play, please consider volunteer coaching. We're really looking for coaches for that, and you'll receive a 50% discount on the program and then a 5-card punch pass to the mark.
Okay. What, parents just busy, or?
I don't know.
How much do they need to know to be a volunteer
coach? They don't need to know too much. I mean, they're little kids running around. You want the kids to have fun. And so just kind of organizing drills. And I know Lauren, she'll be able to help you out with some options for drills.
Okay. And this is kind of fun coming up tomorrow. A learn to juggle class?
Yes, so we thought since April 1st tomorrow, Clown Day here in Park City is apparently what we call it. So if you have ever wanted to learn to juggle, it's only $10 and come out for an hour from 4:30 to 5:30 and learn to juggle.
Okay, Will you be juggling after that?
I hope so. I'll be there.
Okay. All right. And then also a Bite Fit series. What's this about?
Yes. So to get ready for the upcoming bike season, you can come and we do spin classes, and it's progression over a couple weeks to get ready for mountain biking this summer and to get in shape.
All right. So do people, I mean, is it just an individual class or do people sign up for?
You have to sign up online.
For a series of classes.
For a series, yep.
Okay. Do you know the times on those?
I don't off the top of my head.
Okay. ParkCityRecreation.org.
Yeah. Look up there.
Okay. And then also just finally, what can you tell us about the pool project that's going to happen this summer?
Yes. So construction begins this spring and will impact our lap pool area. So no lap swim programs for this summer for 2025. But the leisure pool will operate this summer in full capacity. So see our registration portal for swim lessons and fun alternatives to swim team.
Okay, so swim lessons will be held?
Yep, they will be held in our leisure pool.
Okay.
And I do just want to talk about for summer registration. That starts tomorrow, April 1st, for all of our summer programs. Opens up at 7 a.m. for residents of 84060. And then on April 3rd at 7 a.m. it'll open for all our summer programs to the general public.
Got it.
This does exclude leagues like softball and our summer volleyball league.
Okay, we've got softball coming back and
yeah,
as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, anything else you wanted to mention?
I think that's it. Thank you.
All right, thank you. That's Park City Recreation Program Supervisor Megan Lovin. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, it's springtime in the mountains, and that means muddy trails in the days to come. In the studio now with an update from Wasatch Trails Foundation, I have Executive Director Mia Yu. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with a trails update. I mean, it's going to be wet this week, which means stuff's going to be off limits, but have trails dried out?
Yes, actually they have. We've been riding down in the Heber Valley for a week now. Pretty much everything behind UVU, so the Jordan L. Ridge trail system, everything lower down on the front side of that trail system has been melted out. We do have a significant amount of work to do, obviously, but the trails are rideable. If you're familiar with that zone, it's basically everything below the Riverview Trail. Dutch Hollow is still temporarily closed to horses and bikes. We are trying our best to make sure that those trails don't get damaged, because we do see a lot of damage early season in the Dutch Hollow area. And the Pine Canyon complex, the flow trails over there, and the Pine Canyon Bike Park near the visitor center, and the face, which wraps around sort of to the Dutch Hollow area, all of that, it has been dry also. And the bottom of Blue Sage Ranch, which is near the south end of town, the bottom section of Blue Sage Ranch has been dry as well.
Okay. Sky Ridge as well? Is that looking okay?
Sky Ridge, I would assume, is probably still a little muddy. That's currently, we're working with Mountain Trails to see who ultimately is going to oversee that area, since they did help to build it. Rick and I have been talking the last handful of years to figure out who's going to take it on.
Okay. Last week, I saw a social media post from one of your trail volunteers, Ken McCarthy. He's been doing this for years. He had a rather frightening experience, it sounded like, with kids on e-motorcycles. I mean, basically busting up the trails there and the Jordan L. Ridge. He apparently called the cops, but they came and basically told him, we can't do anything. How come?
So this was a really challenging situation, and obviously we are trying to do everything we can to support Ken. Ken actually is a paid trail manager for that zone. So Momentum Development pays Ken to help manage that trail system, and then we work very closely with him to assist with maintenance and communication and whatever else he needs from an advocacy standpoint. And we've been experiencing these issues in recent years since the south end of that trail system is pretty torn up due to construction. So the biggest challenge is that there are multiple access points for that trail system. Ken and I went and looked at that zone with a police officer and found, you know, maybe six or seven or eight different areas that people could be accessing that trail system. So our biggest challenge right now is that there isn't a designated trailhead where we can have clear signage to inform people what the rules are on that trail system. And in addition, and I'll go back a little bit, so Heber City has never had much involvement in backcountry trail systems because that development, the Jordan L. Ridge Trail System, is actually the first trail system that the city will be, will be in Heber City limits. So the Jordan L. Ridge Trail System in the last handful of years was annexed into Heber City, and this is the first time that Heber City is dealing with a backcountry trail system. So currently, we don't have the code in place, like Park City does, to be able to, I guess, enforce or ticket someone who is on that trail system on a e-motorcycle or class 2 or 3 e-bike.
Okay, so e-bikes, though, are allowed in Wasatch County, but we're talking specifically here, Heber City.
Yes, so class 1 e-bikes, so pedal assist, no throttle. We encourage class 1 e-mountain bike use on our trail system, and those e-bikes are allowed on the Jordan L. Ridge Trail System. The challenge that we're facing is what we're seeing is class 2 and 3 and even just full-on dirt bikes accessing the south end of that trail system.
Oh, not even the electric powered. So can you was a lot of damage done by the motorcycles, or?
I wouldn't say that significant damage was done. It is a continued challenge that we're facing, and luckily with our trail crew this year, we'll be able to help Ken repair any of the trails that have been damaged. And so I think our challenge moving forward is just ensuring that we can help Heber City, educate Heber City, the police department, and all move forward together, which we are making progress right now. I met with Matt Brower, Heber City manager, and Chief Sever of the Heber City Police Department. And the foundation is currently working on essentially writing the code to be enforced, saying that, you know, which class of e-bike is allowed on what area. And also, we want to use that as an educational tool to help our community, because like I said, it is still newer to the city.
Yeah. Okay. So you hope to have that, what, before the city council soon?
Yes. So the goal is to have it before city council. I believe the meeting is April 14th or 15th. So that should be very soon that we get that code to city council. And then the police department will have something that they can enforce. We're also going to work on heavy signage in that area, even though it is challenging because there's a lot of construction, and make sure that we message to the public and also the police department messages to the public what is allowed and what is prohibited on that trail system.
And will you be able to close off some of those numerous accesses?
Unfortunately, I don't think so. Hmm. Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about this spring, in terms of some new trails. What are you going to be working on?
So we have a few projects in process. The connector trail from the WOW Trail to the Deer Valley East Trail System is finished. It's called Tricky Pickle, and it's not technically open yet because it hasn't been signed, but we'll see that open hopefully in June. So you can connect from the WOW Trail and go over to, it's just south of the Flagstaff Loop, if people are familiar. That loop was finished, I think, 2 years ago, and we opened it in conjunction with Deer Valley East and Extel. It's called Heard It Both Ways. Some people may have been on it. So that will do our grand opening for that connection. And I know we've been talking about Bonanza to WOW for a long time. I think 2019 was the first year that we wrote the grant for that trail connection. Bonanza to WOW, some people are calling it Bow WOW or Wowza. But we're working on that project with Mountain Trails, and it will be finished it has to be finished by this fall. So we're really excited that is going to connect the WOW Trail into the new Bonanza Loop Trail, or the BLT Trail, that Mountain Trails just finished last year.
Okay, so those are the two big ones then, yeah?
Those are the two big ones. We have a grant currently for Dutch Hollow Restoration, which we started working on last year, and we will continue to do this year. And then we're actually building an advanced downhill mountain bike trail pretty much parallel to the bottom of the WOW Trail that's being hand dug. So if anyone's interested in coming out and digging or bucking trees or moving trees, we would appreciate it. We are going to have a Burn It In event for that trail that is going to be pretty much advanced riders only to ensure and keep people safe. So that's an exciting project. And then one that I'm super passionate about, we're working on an asphalt pump track. So that's a little bit outside of what we generally do. We normally focus on backcountry soft surface trails. However, one of our values is accessibility, and sometimes those types of trails are more difficult to access. And so this asphalt pump track is essentially an amenity that caters to all socioeconomic statuses. You can ride a $10 scooter, you could ride a free bike swap bike, you could still ride your, you know, $10,000 to $15,000 mountain bike if you wanted, but it's for all ages, all ability levels, and all socioeconomic statuses. We also have a TOTS track that we're building specifically for Strider bikes, and we have been talking to the National Ability Center to ensure that the track is also built for ADA cycles.
Okay, so where's that asphalt pump track going to be?
So that will be in Southfield Park. We have some amazing community partners on this project. So Wasatch County Parks and Rec, Heber Valley Chamber, Heber City, Midway City, and the Tap Tax. And it is going to be just, if everyone's familiar with the pickleball courts, or kind of near where the existing skate park is on Midway Lane there, towards Midway. It's going to be in the detention basin that's right on the corner of Midway Lane and Southfield Road.
Okay, and is that where the TOTS track going to be too, in the park?
Yep, they'll be right next to each other, so the TOTS can feel like they're a part of the non-TOTS area.
Okay. In the past couple of years, I believe, you've received funding from Mountain Trails Foundation to help with some of the maintenance work. Do you have that grant money coming in as well this year?
Yes. Mountain Trails has been an amazing community partner and has supported us in such a huge way. And we are actually excited to announce that we will be able to fully fund the trail crew this year through Tap Tax. So I believe up here it's RAP Tax, but it's the same, recreation tax. So through Wasatch County, Midway City, and Heber City, all of the entities who oversee the Tap Tax for Wasatch County have put money towards the trail crew. Laura and my goal last year was to say, hey, look at how amazing this is. This is super important that we are able to maintain our trails and we're able to continue to bring this trail crew back and provide safe access to our community. And the community said, yeah, you're right. That was really great. And so we're going to support that. So Mountain Trails still is technically going to be the employer. They help us out with insurance and ensuring fair wages and benefits like paid holidays. But we will be reimbursing for all of those trail crew hours this year.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because it's not like it goes away. It just accumulates, right?
Yeah.
All right. And do you want to mention do you have any volunteer trail days coming up?
Yeah, we actually have a couple of amazing events coming up. So we have International Women's Mountain Bike Day coming up May 3rd. And that is going to be on the UVU trail system. We're renting out the parking lot. We're working with Women MTB and a handful of other partners to just celebrate women mountain biking. We're going to be giving away a mountain bike, so keep an eye on the website for registration for that. And then we also have, and I know a lot of other trail organizations have National Trails Day coming up as well on June 7th. We are actually combining our Evo Trailgate event. So it was a big party we did last year with Evo Salt Lake. We're combining those two events. So we'll have WOW shuttles and games and prizes and group rides. And that will be in the state park on June 7th.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I don't think so.
Okay. Mia? Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Mia Yu, again, is the executive director of the Wasatch Trails Foundation. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.